I'm JP Tuesday.
And I'm Kiki Cannon. As lifelong Disney fans, the work of countless talented Disney creatives have shaped our lives.
Now, as the Disney catalog expands, we're taking a journey through film and television to discover if that spark that shaped us as children lives on in adulthood.
Does your favorite Disney media still cast that same spell? Join us as we find out. We are
Rewatching the Magic. Hi, Kiki.
Hi, Tuesday.
This is it, the final installment of Fury's Big Month, and what a way to go with the movie that a lot of us never thought would happen.
We were kind of like, we'll believe it when we see it, and well, we saw it.
Yeah, and this movie is so big that we cannot do it alone. Like the Avengers, we are going to assemble with our special guest.
Will our mystery guest enter and sign in, please?
Hello! I am David.
Yes, this is actually my brother, David. Someone I've wanted to show on the show for a while, who still to this day has not forgiven me for not bringing him on for the Aladdin episode.
I dislike you. Payback is coming one day.
Can we save the payback until after we save the world?
Sure, fine, I guess.
We got this glowy blue box we got to deal with.
This is kind of a big week in terms of Marvel because as we are recording this, Avengers Campus is set to open up. And when this episode is released, the Loki series will be set into air. David, are you hyped for the Loki series?
I am. I feel like there is a lot of work that has to be done to fix the timeline that the Avengers screwed up.
Yeah.
While trying to save one timeline, they pretty much completely screwed up the space-time continuum.
There's actually one thing from this movie that I hope comes back in the Loki series, and I'll mention it when we get to it kind of in our conversation when we discuss that part of the movie.
Yeah, and it's in this one event, the Battle of New York, has affected so much of the MCU going forward. I actually, before we started recording, I actually shared a video with David chronicalizing all of the events directly after this movie. And it's amazing how many other movies tie into this.
I have a quick question. So this is not the movie with Uma Thurman in it?
And Ralph Fiennes and Sean Connery dressed as a bear?
Is that not this movie?
Well, okay. Actually, because of that movie, this movie had to be retitled in the UK. It had to be called Avengers Assembled because the Avengers is such a big cultural touchstone in the UK up until recently, you said the Avengers in England, and that's what they thought of. I mean,
yeah,
you think of Emma Peel, and you think of, you know.
Stephen Peel, not Stark and Rogers. So, no, we are not talking about the 1998 Warner Brothers movie, because this is a Disney podcast, and Disney doesn't own Warner Brothers yet.
Yeah.
Anything else?
But let's talk about, real quick, the Avengers Campus opening, because as we're recording, that just happened last night.
Yeah, the opening ceremony.
The thing that I'm super excited about is that they are actually having the Sam Wilson Captain America meet and greet.
Yeah, Anthony Mackie came out and with the shield to give to the Sam Wilson Captain America meet and greet character.
He had the Dora Milaje come out and hold a moment of silence for all the kings and queens who have left us.
Yeah, and one of them has been identified as Okoye.
Yeah.
And she's going to have her own show. You get to learn how to kick butt with Okoye. The Spider-Man stunt thing with the animatronic,
which does look really cool.
Yeah, especially with the little show they have with Spider-Man.
So the list of characters at Avengers Campus: we have Spider-Man, Captain America, Doctor Strange, Black Panther and his guards, Ant-Man and the Wasp, Captain Marvel, Thor, the Guardians of the Galaxy, which is Star-Lord, Groot and Gamora, Black Widow and Captain America. Both Captain Americas.
Yeah. The live stream ended with the actor that plays Shang-Chi at the shawarma stand. So it is implying that once that film comes out, Shang-Chi will be added to the heroes that you will meet at Avengers Campus. Anyway, let's move on to the main thing we're going to be talking about. And there came a day unlike any other, when Earth's mightiest heroes were united against a common threat to fight the foes that no single hero could withstand. On that day, the Avengers were born. It's 2008. You're seeing the first Iron Man movie. You're one of the people that decided to stay through all through the credits. And there you see Sam Jackson as Nick Fury saying, I'm here to talk to you about the Avengers Initiative. And then it was announced that we would get Iron Man 2. And then that laid the groundwork for Thor and Captain America, seeing the hammer at the end of Iron Man 2, seeing the shield in Iron Man 2, and the blink and you'll miss it clip of the Hulk at the end of Iron Man 2.
Yeah. I think by the time this movie came out, we had a pretty good idea who was going to be all the characters that were going to be in it.
Yeah.
And then it was the whole thing, me and you were talking about, like, why isn't Ant-Man in this movie? Because he's in the comic.
I mean, there was an Ant-Man movie planned, and then Disney and Edgar Wright had a falling out. And that's a story for another day.
Yeah.
And we did kind of mention how in Thor, how Jeremy Renner's Hawkeye kind of got shafted. He was there for 5 seconds, and that was it. That's your introduction to Hawkeye compared to the introduction of Black Widow and Iron Man 2.
Then again, if you think about it, Hawkeye is kind of a douche in the Marvel Universe. He's not a great person.
Depends on who's writing the comic.
Yeah. I mean, really, it really does kind of depend on who's writing comics. I've read some where he's okay, and I've read some where he's kind of pathetic, you know, and I've read some where he's a complete jerk. But also, Tony Stark is a jerk, but everybody loves him.
True.
You know? I mean, if you can kind of redeem that image, why can't you redeem it for Hawkeye a little bit? I don't know. It just depends on the writing.
It comes down to, unfortunately, what I call the rule of cool, in that people see Iron Man as cool because he has the cool suit and he's rich and he has the hot redhead wife and all of that. And Hawkeye is lame because he has no superpowers and he uses a bow and arrow.
But here's the thing.
If you can't make an archer cool, you are the worst writer in the world.
As a DM, Rangers are amazing.
Yeah.
Hawkeye would be an amazing D&D character.
Hawkeye doesn't even need to look where he's aiming.
No.
And I love that about this movie.
His ability to hit anything, I want that feat for my Ranger. Just where he doesn't even have to look. He just aims and fires.
Yeah, the person who walks in with the bow and arrow is the cooler character. They're just going to be the coolest character.
I mean, out of dozens of aliens, Hawkeye took out 12 of them.
This was supposed to lead to more stuff. And at the time, Kevin Feige had a plan. And we've talked about this man before, and I have to mention him again. That is the person who was the head of Marvel at the time, Ike Perlmutter. The Kevin Feige's plan after Avengers was to do Black Widow. Because, hey, we already introduced Black Widow in Iron Man 2. She's a featured in the Avengers. We can now do a spinoff of her own film. And Perlmutter said no, because, as he would put it, female-led superheroes don't make money, and no one's going to want to buy a toy of a female superhero.
They underestimate nerds.
They do. And again, at the time, our female-led superhero movies were Elektra and Catwoman.
Okay, first off, that's not Catwoman. Okay, we need to stop that right now. You called it Catwoman, we have to stop that. That's not Catwoman.
That's Jinx.
I don't know what movie that was. Had nothing to do with Catwoman.
So yeah, he said he actually pushed forward for Iron Man 3 because... This is the real thing, is that we can sell toys of all of Iron Man suits, which is why there's a bunch of Iron Man suits in Iron Man 3. So, bad. Iron Man 3 was made because the head of Marvel wanted to sell a bunch of Iron Man toys.
I mean, he's not wrong, but still.
And it took us 10 years where we finally got a Black Widow movie. Imagine if we had gotten this in, like, 2013.
I don't think it would have worked in 2013. I think it makes sense for it to be released now. Because Wonder Woman's already been out. Captain Marvel's already been out.
But we would have had her be the first, you know?
But it wouldn't have... I don't think it would have worked. I think Black Widow would have been seen as Marvel trying to reach for a demographic they probably wouldn't have been able to have yet.
I mean, they kind of got that backlash from Wonder Woman and Captain Marvel anyway.
Right, but still.
So, we've mentioned this with the Hulk. Let's kind of mention this here. We have a different Hulk.
We do have a different Hulk. We have Mark
Edward Ruffin. Norton did play Hulk in Incredible Hulk in 2008. And we got Mark Ruffalo here. I mentioned the story there, but I will mention the story here again. Norton wanted too much money, and Marvel said no. Also, in later years, Norton would say that his direction of what he wanted to go with the Hulk was the complete opposite of where they actually went up with Ruffalo. As we saw Ruffalo's Hulk go in a little bit more comedic direction. I mean, to this day, there are people who are upset over the direction the Hulk took, especially with the way Smart Hulk ended up, with Norton going a bit more dark with that character. Neither are wrong in what they wanted to do with the Hulk, but I don't think Norton's version would have worked in the MCU like Ruffalo's did.
Well, the interesting thing is there is a quote from Feige that kind of says it wasn't about money.
Hmm.
I mean, it specifically says it wasn't about money.
Go ahead.
The exact quote is, "Our decision is definitely not one based on monetary factors, but instead rooted in the need for an actor who embodies the creativity and collaborative spirit of our other talented cast members. The Avengers demands players who thrive working as part of an ensemble, as evidenced by," and then lists the other cast members. "We are looking to announce a name actor who fulfills these requirements and is passionate about the iconic role in the coming weeks." Norton's agent fired back and called Feige's comments, quote, "purposefully misleading," and, quote, "an inappropriate attempt to paint our client in a negative light."
One phrase that comes to mind when in these situations, if it's not about the money, it's about the money.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure it's probably about the money.
Talked about, like, Terrence Howard being replaced with Don Cheadle was completely because of money. Terrence Howard wanted a lot of money because contractually he was to get paid more than Robert Downey Jr. And Marvel said, yeah, no. RDJ is our star. You can be replaced. And then we get Don Cheadle. So that's that thing. So let's kind of go into our actors. We've talked about pretty much every actor in this movie. We've talked about Robert Downey Jr., Iron Man, Chris Evans, Captain America, Chris Hemsworth, Thor, Scarlett Johansson as Black Widow, Tom Hiddleston as Loki, Clark Gregg as Phil Coulson, the amazing Phil Coulson, Stellan Skarsgård as Dr. Selvig, Sam Jackson as Nick Fury. Let's talk about the new kids on the block. Let's start with Mr. Ruffalo here.
Yeah, Mark Ruffalo was actually kind of had been going on for quite some time before ending up in the role of the Hulk. The interesting thing is that he was one of those, much like when we talked about Scarlett Johansson, who had a pretty long and illustrious career before ending up with Marvel. And his career was kind of varied. He was in movies like Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind. He was in 13 Going on 30.
With Brie Larson.
Yeah.
A very young
and Jennifer Garner.
Yeah.
He was in the movie Zodiac. But he kind of bounced between really light movies and then really, really dark movies. He was briefly in Where the Wild Things Are, which I think a lot of people probably saw. And speaking of dark, one of his bigger roles right before Avengers was Shutter Island with Leonardo DiCaprio, the Martin Scorsese movie.
Also was in a movie called View from the Top with Gwyneth Paltrow. And they played a couple. So Pepper and the Hulk kind of hooked up in one movie.
Interestingly, he was someone I had personally never really run across until Avengers. But the interesting thing to me about Ruffalo, and the reason why I think he ended up being a good choice long term, and the one that has kind of stuck with the Hulk long term, is the way he approached the role. We talked in Thor about the reason why the directing worked so well is because Branagh was used to doing Shakespeare, and he approached Thor as just modern day Shakespeare.
Shakespeare with superheroes.
Yeah. Which was the correct way to go. And the same thing happened with Ruffalo. When they asked him about the role, he said that he saw the Hulk as kind of a modern take on something like Hamlet. It's a guy torn between two extremes. He's got light in him and dark in him, and he's trying to figure out, you know, the good side of him, the murderous side of him. How do you balance these two extremes?
Very Jekyll and Hyde.
Yeah, and also he talked about his love of the old TV series. He was a huge fan of the Bill Bixby series.
There's definitely some Bill Bixby in Ruffalo's performance of the character.
Yeah, because that show was entirely about the emotion of being the Hulk. It wasn't really about the stunts or the goofy science or anything. It was really just about the lonely man theme. You know, it was about this guy is completely removed from society and dealing with this unique situation that he can't really depend on anybody else.
And this actually changes up the way they do the Hulk in future films, because this is the first film to actually use on-set motion capture for the Hulk, where they have used CG in the past for the Hulk, but this is the first time they actually had a person on the set doing the mocap for the Hulk. And it was Ruffalo in the mocap suit, which he would be in for every other version of every other appearance has been Ruffalo in a mocap suit.
Yeah, and unlike in the Norton film, they actually used Ruffalo's face for the Hulk's face. You can actually see Ruffalo's features in the Hulk.
And we actually get Ruffalo speaking as the Hulk. The puny god. That's Ruffalo. The growls are Lou Ferrigno, but the speech is Ruffalo.
Yeah, which I really like. And they kind of mocked up a sort of green screen mocap suit to go over him that increased the size of his torso,
yeah, his
so
mass,
that when when people had to grab onto him and stuff, that they were grabbing onto something that was actually Hulk-sized.
They did the same thing with Thanos in the later movies, where they would put this big foam piece around Josh Brolin's body and his head, so he would have the proper proportions for the actors to grab onto.
Yeah, really interesting mix of technologies that they did for that. So really cool. And I ended up liking Mark Ruffalo. I wasn't sure I was going to be sold on him going into Avengers, but I really liked him.
And
so moving on.
Let's move on to our other new kid on the block. Kobe Smothers. Maria Hill. How I Met That Mother.
Yeah, and you just tipped it there. Pretty much everybody who knew her from How I Met Your Mother. Yeah. She was Robin Scherbatsky, who ended up being the end game of that show.
Which made a lot of people angry.
Yeah, that was a weird show.
That's how your Aunt Robin joined the Avengers, kids.
Yeah. But yeah, we all knew her as just, you know, Robin Sparkles. It's like, and now she's going to be a badass S.H.I.E.L.D. agent. And I don't think any of us were particularly into it when we heard that cast. I know I wasn't. I was very, like, why? I ended up liking her as Maria Hill. If they ever bring Maria Hill back, I would be okay with that. Yeah, so we got the other one that we, you know, technically not new, but we kind of glossed over him when he showed up in Thor because he only had two freaking lines. So properly introducing Jeremy Renner as Hawkeye.
Yes. Who's only called Hawkeye once in this movie, and I had forgotten that was there.
I actually never thought before I rewatched this movie. I'm like, do they ever actually call him Hawkeye?
And yeah, during the battle, Black Widow says Hawkeye.
Yeah, that's the only time you ever hear him called Hawkeye. He's called Clint or the Hawk.
So yeah, kind of an interesting and long career for Renner as well. Got his start in National Lampoon's Senior Trip as a kind of a bit part. Interestingly, not his first bout with Whedon, mm-hmm. as he showed up at one point on the Angel TV series.
Yeah.
And then after doing a little bit of a stint on TV for a while, skipped back to film and starred in a movie about Jeffrey Dahmer, in which he played Jeffrey Dahmer.
I can buy it.
You can buy him eating people?
I mean, things get bad enough, you know. He was also in Pink's music video for the movie song Trouble. Did a part in the assassination of Jesse James by the coward Robert Ford as the cousin of Jesse James. And then skipped over and did 28 Weeks Later. Right before showing up in Avengers, he was in The Hurt Locker. Probably one of his bigger film successes. Also did a movie called The Town with Ben Affleck, and got another Oscar nomination, his first being for Hurt Locker, excuse me. So he was coming off of a real high when he went into Thor. Jeremy Renner coming off of that high of like, yeah, I just got two Oscar nominations and I'm willing to do a cameo in hopes of getting maybe a bigger part later. That was kind of unheard of, but it worked out for him. He's still getting work now, and now he's going to get his own TV series. So good move for him. And then, you know, like you said, we've talked about most everybody in this movie previously, but there are a couple of kind of smaller bit players that are kind of note. We've got the kind of shadowy security council that Fury talks to. The two speaking roles in that are kind of well-known actors, Powers Booth and Jenny Agutter. So interesting that they're in here.
Yeah, Powers Booth's character, Gideon Malik, will become a major part of the Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. show.
Yeah. So
fun fact, when rewatching the Avengers, I noticed a character I completely forgot this actress was in this movie.
Ashley Johnson
from Critical Role.
Yeah, we were going to mention her later on.
so yeah, this is actually I completely forgot she was in this movie.
As yeah, Ashley Johnson plays the waitress Beth. She originally had a much bigger role in this movie. She was kind of to be introduced as a potential love interest for Steve Rogers, but like all of her scenes where she's speaking got cut.
Yeah.
Which is why later in the movie, where you see Captain America get unmasked and Ashley Johnson kind of look at him, it was to mean more because she had just met him earlier that day when she was at her the restaurant she worked at.
Right.
In a small cameo as the security guard who finds the Bruce Banner after he changes back from the Hulk, we have Harry Dean Stanton, who is a legend, in kind of one of the final roles near the end of his life.
Him calling Hulk an alien when he was in Alien.
Yeah, it's an interesting thing of just kind of how chill he is at finding Banner, you know. He's like, are you an alien? Nope. Well, then you got a condition, son.
That character's seen some things.
Yeah, it's a good scene. We have a brief appearance by Enver Jokai as a police officer. He will come back in the Marvel Universe to play Daniel Sousa in the Agent Carter series.
I would say this is a descendant, but considering the final season of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., maybe not.
Yeah, I don't think he would have had enough time to have a descendant given that thing. But the one I kind of want to talk about, and I told you before we started recording that you're going to laugh at me. Playing the pivotal role of the other, we have a member of the Whedonverse, Alexis Denisoff. Now, how long has it been since this movie has come out? Almost 10 years, right? When did I realize this was Alexis Denisoff?
When you were making notes for this movie?
When I was making notes for this podcast.
Wesley works for Thanos.
Oh! Because he's completely hidden. You can never see his face. And he's using such a weird voice.
And it's obviously enhanced technology. Technically, yeah. Put an echo on its voice.
Yeah. So I actually had never realized that this is Alexis Denisoff. I am really mad at Joss Whedon for misusing Alexis Denisoff in such a horrible way where you can neither see his face nor hear his voice.
He makes one other appearance in the MCU as the other in Guardians of the Galaxy, where he is quickly killed off by Thanos.
Yeah, I do.
No,
I
he's
do
killed off
like
by
it.
Ronan.
Well, yeah, he's killed off by Ronan.
Ronan, yeah. So, do we want to talk about the big kind of elephant in the room of the choice of director?
I've been kind of holding off on that, but yeah, we're gonna have to talk about Joss Whedon.
I don't think either of us really ever wanted to have to talk about this. I said to you, had we done this episode a year ago, this would have been a very different episode.
Yeah.
If you go back a year ago and listen to us talk, I mean, go back and listen to our Iron Man episode.
Yeah.
When his name comes up, it's a very different tone.
And then all the backstage problems of Justice League came out. A lot of people that he used to work on Buffy came forward with some stuff on him. Let's just rip the Band-Aid off. Kiki, you want to go through all that?
Joss doesn't seem to be the man we all thought he was for all those years.
Yeah, he positioned himself as a feminist ally, and turns out not so much.
Yeah, it started when his ex-wife kind of mentioned some things that happened in their marriage. But, you know, I think the reason why it didn't make as much of a splash at the time is because things happen between two people in a marriage. And the things that she was alleging, she never alleged certain things that were immediate line crosses.
Red flags
for most, most people. It was some minor red flags, and at the time, a lot of people took it as perhaps sour grapes of a, you know, personal hurt. You know, they were going through a messy divorce. It might have just been a person trying to get better leverage in a divorce settlement or something. You know, I think that's why a lot of us maybe overlooked some things we shouldn't have.
Mm-hmm. And then a lot of stuff.
And then the Justice League things came out.
Ray Fisher came forward with some racial allegations. Gal Gadot came out saying that Wheaton wanted her to be more sexualized in the movie, and that if she did not go ahead with the sexualization, that he was going to end her career.
And then the thing that I think was the final kind of nail in the coffin for most of us who had considered ourselves fans was the Charisma Carpenter allegation. And she came forward and talked about things that had happened to her on the set of Angel, on the set of Buffy, the fact that he had done things like made fun of her weight while she was pregnant, which is, I mean, who does that to a pregnant woman? You're supposed to gain weight when you're pregnant. That's how you feed a growing baby. Many other things. And then things like James Marsters came forward and said that Joss Whedon grabbed him by the throat and threw him into a wall because he was displeased that Spike had become a character that was liked by the fandom. Apparently Joss did not like the character of Spike and was angry that he had to keep him in the show. I think the one that really set a lot of people off was Michelle Trachtenberg saying that there was a rule that, quote, Joss is not allowed in a room alone with Michelle ever again. There was nothing more specific than that on that one, and I think that scared a lot of people.
I mean, I mentioned it before we recorded, but I'll mention it here. There's knowing what we know about Joss now, going back into this movie, and specifically Pepper Potts, her attire. She is not wearing shoes at all in this movie. She, for her, most of her appearance is her in Daisy Duke shorts and a mostly unbuttoned work shirt, button-up work shirt. And
which is something Pepper Potts has never worn prior to this in the Marvel universe.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't remember her wearing anything that looks like that before. And I know she's supposed to be, like, relaxing with Tony, but we've seen her relaxing with Tony before.
Yeah.
So I do believe you are correct. It was something that had never particularly occurred to me before, because, honestly, I had not watched this film since the allegations.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. David, course, did you have anything to add? I don't.
Knowing now what everything has come out, you can, going back and watching a lot of stuff he's made, you can see where all the problems are that we just kind of glossed over when we were younger.
Yeah, because we didn't know it, and also it was entertainment, and we thought, oh, hey, it's just fun.
Right.
Especially even in this movie, mostly with Black Widow, there's a part in the battle where her zipper kind of falls down, and you see cleavage on Black Widow. And the one thing I shared with Kiki before was the scene where Black Widow is talking to Loki, and Loki is in the pod, and there's Scarlett Johansson center frame, just kind of a focus, the camera focusing on her backside.
Interestingly, there is kind of a strange, I did notice one time where Captain America is kind of framed sexually in the same way that that Black Widow frequently is.
That's and America's booty.
It really is, yeah. They're getting on the jet to go save New York.
You think that's why they did that joke in Endgame?
Probably. I wonder if it is. Yeah.
I wouldn't put it past them to do that.
But it, I noticed it rewatching the movie, especially in light of that running gag in Endgame, where I was wondering if it was specifically framed like that for a reason. Because it is, you know, Evans kind of jumps in the jet, and instead of turning around to face the camera like Hawkeye does, he kind of stands with his back and poses, like, just full-on booty out, like, right towards the camera in the middle of the frame. And it is rather interesting.
Anything else we need to discuss before we go into the story of the movie proper?
Well, I mean, I think we can just hop around there, maybe some of our favorite parts.
If you've seen everyone's seen the first Avengers movie by now.
Everyone's seen this movie. The entire world. As much money as this movie made, everyone in the world has seen this movie four times in theaters. It's fine.
So let's start with our guest, David. What were your favorite parts of this movie?
My favorite scene in this entire movie is one that I actually love the way it's shot, because it looks like one continuous shot. It is when all the Avengers are fighting the Chitauri.
Oh, yeah.
And it
yeah.
follows each and every one of them, ending with Hulk's punching Thor off screen. That is probably my favorite scene in this movie, just because it shows all of them fighting, but still working together.
It's them finally becoming the Avengers.
Yes.
Because this whole movie was them essentially separated, you know, clashing egos, but once it came to it, they could work together, and that was them working together, assembling, as it were. I remember being in the theater when this came out, and the panoramic scene of all the heroes together posing and the Hulk roaring got the biggest cheer out of this crowd, because that's what everyone wanted. We wanted that hero moment of all of these superheroes together fighting side by side, and you knew something awesome was going to happen after that. It was so awesome, they reused it in Endgame.
I mean, they used it in every scene. Every Avengers movie has a scene like that, though. Where they're all just kind of in a circle. The one in Age of Ultron, at least they're doing stuff in their circle.
Yeah.
You got to give them credit, though. That is a good shot.
It is.
It's such a good shot.
Apparently,
not to get goosebumps watching that shot, even today.
That one shot is the reason why this movie is at a different aspect ratio than every other Marvel movie. Have you noticed that? And because they wanted to have the Hulk in full size in that shot.
Yes.
Which I find very weird, that they decided to change the aspect ratio of the entire movie for that one shot.
It's so hard to kind of pick out one favorite part, but I really found myself digging the bit at the beginning where, you know, they have the bit at the beginning where Loki shows up to claim the Tesseract, and he turns Hawkeye and he turns Selvig, and then they're escaping from the campus, the SHIELD campus there, and Hawkeye runs across Maria Hill, and she's like, you know, who's that guy, pointing to Loki? And Hawkeye's like, I don't know. They don't tell me. I just transport things, you know. Hill's like, yep, that's SHIELD. Okay, moving along. And she's just bopping along. And then Fury's like, Hawkeye's turned. And I love Hill so much in that moment, because she needs nothing else. Fury has just told her, this is the enemy, this is the target, take it out. And she's like, nope, I don't need anything more. I trust Fury implicitly. And immediately she's like, I don't care if it's Hawkeye, I will end this. And immediately she is focused on target, and she is single-mindedly chasing after this target.
I just love in that shot, Loki is hanging on to the bars at the on that truck. Like, why would you need to hang on to that? You're a freaking god.
I mean, sometimes, you know, it's a bumpy ride. He's been through a lot already.
He fell through a wormhole in space off the Bifrost. He can survive falling off a truck.
But I still just love that kind of whole opening chase scene because it really did sell me on Kobe Smulders as Maria Hill, because I did not expect her to be that good in that role. And that first scene, I was just like, okay, I totally buy this woman as a trained SHIELD agent.
So I have a question about the scepter.
Go ahead. We know the Mind Stone's in it. We didn't know then, but we know now.
Okay, we know now the Mind Stone is in the scepter. Mm-hmm. Thanos knows the Mind Stone is in the scepter.
He had to
know it was in the scepter. Because he had it.
But if he had an Infinity Stone, his whole thing is finding the Infinity Stones. If he had an Infinity Stone, why would he give it away?
I was always thinking that the Mind Stone was actually in the Tesseract, and that's why they were... Because other than that, why do they need the friggin' Tesseract? If they already have the Mind Stone and Scepter, why do they give a crap about the Tesseract? Because
the Tesseract was the Space Stone.
Yes. Again, we did not know that at the time.
Well, I think kind of, because the Tesseract kind of like the Space Stone. It kind of works the same way.
The Cosmic Cube, as it was known in the comics, yes, it could transport from one point in space to another, and it also could rewrite someone's mind. The Cosmic Cube can do pretty much anything that the writers decided to do, and which we all thought it was the Cosmic Cube, but Marvel kept saying, nope, it's not the Cosmic Cube, it's Tesseract. Little did we know that it's the Space Stone, and they will reveal that later. Did they even know it was a Space Stone at the time? That's the question.
That is a good question. Possibly they knew it was going to be the Space Stone because they had everything kind of loosely planned out.
I don't know, because a lot of people more said like the Thanos thing was not even part of the plan. That was Joss Whedon being Joss Whedon, trying to sneak in a character that he may not have had permission for, and Marvel just ran with it. He tried to pull that again in Ultron by putting in Captain Marvel, but Disney shut that down.
Yeah.
Well, maybe it was a thing of, if I give you the Mind Stone, you will bring me, you know, if I let you borrow this one stone that I have, you will bring me two.
Possible. And again, we didn't know that just down the block, there's the Ancient One with the Time Stone.
I'm going to say that I want to talk about the scene in Germany, because I do think that really that's honestly probably my favorite scene.
Okay.
Where Loki goes and tries to tell humans their true nature. That, you know, you're just made to be ruled, and I'm made to rule you, and everybody needs to kneel and everything, and there's just the one guy that gets up. You want to be that guy. That guy is the hero of the Avengers.
See, now when they brought up the fact of Captain America traveling through time, I always assumed that would have been Captain America. Like, they should have brought him, if he was still alive, to play old man Captain America.
Possible. But
that would have made more sense.
Maybe.
Well, but he's a German man, you know? Like, it makes more sense if he's a German man. True. You know, he saw this as a kid.
Yeah, he was there when it happened, and he's not going to let that happen again. He's going to at least he may not be physically able to do something, but he can just stand there and say, no, I will not kneel to you. And I love that speech he gives you. You know, there are always men like you, men that think they are powerful. And especially now in 2021, after everything that's gone on, hearing someone take that speech, yes, there will always be men like that who want to oppress, who want to take over. And as we've seen in reality, there are people that will follow that, those people, those men.
Yeah, there's always going to be people that kneel as well. And yeah. Be that guy. I really love that scene, and I love Captain America coming in and being like, you know, last time I was in Germany, there's a guy that sounded a lot like you, and me and him did not agree.
You know? He punched him in the face on stage many times.
And in a similar vein, because it comes from a similar tradition, at the end of the movie, you know, the other kind of real hero is the line we used in our promo when Fury says, you know, I realize you've made your decision, but considering it's a stupid ass decision, I'm not gonna follow it. Knowing what we know now in retrospect, I'm assuming the two pilots that took off from the helicarrier are probably hydroplants.
Possibly.
If they're not, they need to be disappeared. That is the worst of humanity. Those two pilots that hear, take this nuclear weapon and destroy New York with a full civilian population and all of the Avengers inside of it.
There
at
are
the order
also...
of this shadow group of six people who you don't know the identities of. Because it's an order.
And there are people in the military that will blindly follow orders.
And I mean, even people outside of the military. I'm not just going to say, like, that's just a military thing.
There are
but,
people that, when ordered to do something, will just do it no matter what or how horrific it is.
Because somebody more powerful said so. Yeah. You know, that's a thing. And it goes back to what Loki said. You know, it's bringing that back. But if you're that guy, like, man, I can't imagine being that guy.
That's, I was like, just following orders. That's the, I mean, we've heard that phrase. Yeah. I was just following orders. And that's no excuse. You still did a terrible thing. I don't care if you were following orders. You still could have done something to not do that.
Yeah. Find that guy and make sure he lives out the rest of his life on a secluded island somewhere with no contact with anybody and no ability to do any harm anymore.
I'm going to assume that maybe it was Hydra. I mean, especially how many characters we found out are Hydra. Especially,
yeah.
I don't know, we've mentioned him a couple of times in this podcast, Agent Stillwell.
Yeah. But at this point in the Avengers, we don't know that.
No.
I mean, watching this movie, that's just some random S.H.I.E.L.D. and or military, you know, U.S. military person.
Mm-hmm. I think looking back through all the Marvel movies and then going back to Avengers, you start noticing little things here and there, like, okay, this person, like the whole thing with what happens after the scepter gets taken, and then you got, okay, well, now you have Hydra, and then the scepter shows up later, and then it creates Wanda and her brother, and it's like, all this stuff, was it planned that way? Was it just happy accidents that all this stuff happened?
I mean, from a real-world perspective, probably wasn't, but from an in-universe perspective, Hydra always seemed to be five steps ahead of S.H.I.E.L.D., especially now that they infiltrated S.H.I.E.L.D.
Say, it's always easy in these situations that once you say, like, well, there was always a big evil manipulating the strings, that, like, every bad guy prior to that, you can go, like, well, they were probably Hydra. You know?
Yeah.
But,
bring out that giant whiteboard with all the red string and start pointing stuff.
Yeah, you know, you can be that person with it in retrospect. But here's the thing, even if you go, like, well, but Hydra, is With the exception of people like Bucky, who were like very specifically brainwashed, most of Hydra is just people.
Yeah.
They're just people who it's like, hey, do you want to be part of an evil organization? And they're like, yeah, that sounds good. I mean, Hydra is very specifically a stand-in for the Nazis, and Nazis were just people. It was like, hey, do you believe in white supremacy and taking over the world? Yeah. Okay. Come join the Nazis. Like, you know, what happened after the Nazi regime fell? They just went back to being people. You know, they're not like monsters with three heads. They're just people. And that's the thing about it, is that you can say, like, you know, oh, well, they got into, you know, Hydra or whatever, but 99% of Hydra is just normal people who just chose to be in Hydra. And that's a scary thing, and that's the thing that's scary about our world. And it's the scary thing about the guy in the plane with the nuke heading toward New York. Is Hydra or not, it's just a guy who heard a really horrible order and went, yeah, take a nuclear bomb to New York. That sounds fine. That sounds like an order I should follow. Kill an entire civilian population and all of the Avengers. Yeah, that sounds worth it to wipe out
these aliens,
alien force. And I mean,
the thing is, it wouldn't have worked.
Yeah, yeah, it's like, I don't think a nuclear blast would have closed the portal.
No, it would have killed everyone in there.
It would have killed the aliens, yeah, but there were still more on the other side of that portal.
And then the aliens would have just come through the portal and had no resistance and would have easily just taken over New Jersey, you know? Just been like...
And then we'd be under the rule of King Loki.
Yeah.
Would Loki, I mean, and Loki Thor survive?
No.
Would Loki and Thor survive?
I don't think they would, because
I mean, a good sword wounding can kill an Asgardian. I mean, they're not immortal.
So I would assume if just the power of a star could probably kill Thor, pretty sure a nuke could probably do it too.
True.
Yeah.
And then we would have had Infinity War 10 years earlier.
Yeah.
Thanos would have just jumped on in. Oh, hey, okay, so there's three Infinity Stones here. We know where two are. I heard of the Time Stone here. Let's go kill that bald lady. But so let's kind of get to the pretty awesome three-way fight between Iron Man, Captain America, and Thor. Because we see so many things that come back in later films. We kind of talked about how Tony Stark has reinforced his armor to absorb electricity after the match with Whiplash, and that comes back again in Endgame, where he uses Thor's lightning to fire a supercharge at Thanos.
Yeah, and he uses it later on, once he and Thor are allies in future films, to kind of redirect some of Thor's lightning blasts, you know? Yeah.
The amazing end of that fight, where, you want me to bring the hammer down? And with the Vibranium shield versus space metal hammer, and that big shockwave again, that comes back in Endgame, where Cap remembers this and uses that tactic against Thanos.
What's funny is, as I was saying earlier, none of Cap's opponents yield, because Thor does not yield to the shield.
Yes, when Captain America throws his mighty shield, all those who oppose his shield must yield.
But Thor did not yield.
Loki didn't yield either, so
no.
Also, he didn't write that theme song, so I'm pretty sure he would have been like, you know, they don't have a tendency to yield. I mean, they tend to just fight harder. You might want to... I know it rhymes, but...
He just is the Star-Spangled Man with the plan. He just has the plan. He's not about the yielding.
Okay, so he's not about the effectiveness of said plan, just the plan.
Yes, the plan. But yeah, and
he probably would tell him, you know, most of the time I kind of make up the plan on the fly anyway.
They bring the fact that they actually question, why doesn't Loki run? Like, obviously Loki is there intentionally because, as we see earlier in the movie, Barton needs a distraction to steal this meteorite piece, so they can for the Tesseract. And Loki's entire thing is just a distraction. His whole big charade, his whole big kneel before your god thing, that's a distraction so Hawkeye can steal the meteorite piece. This is and it's a good plan. And the whole thing is that Loki doesn't run because he needs to be on the helicarrier.
Yeah.
Loki outsmarts the entire Avengers team throughout this entire movie. He is constantly five steps in front of everybody up until the end.
Yeah.
Well, because he didn't plan for the nuclear weapon and Tony Stark being selfless. Because nobody did.
Loki's plan was get it taken to S.H.I.E.L.D.'s headquarters, make sure S.H.I.E.L.D. takes the scepter, have the scepter infect the entire team so they can turn on each other, attempt to turn the Hulk, which would have been a whole other problem.
Well, he succeeded in unleashing the Hulk.
He did, but I think he wanted to control the Hulk.
Well, that's what happened in the comics. I don't know if he had gotten the scepter to Banner, would he have had control over the Hulk when he turned?
Possibly.
I don't know.
My thing is that I think that Hulk's anger might have overridden it.
Yeah, probably. Also, at that point, nobody could really control the Hulk. So,
I mean, in a way, I mean, Scarlet Witch, Wanda was able to, but she wasn't really in control of the Hulk. She just made him go out of control.
Yeah, I mean, possibly. So it's really an unanswered question. I mean, it is an Infinity Gem, so I think it would have honestly just gone however the plot would have wanted it to go.
Yeah, that's true.
But yeah, I think it would have been more fun if it had kind of half worked, you know?
Like, he had gotten Banner under control, but then once Banner turned into the Hulk, it all would have been smash, 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 puny god.
Yeah, that would have been pretty fun. I kind of would have liked to seen that, if it would have been like, oh no, Loki has control over him, and then Loki said something that would have made like the Hulk part mad, and then it would have just snapped, you know?
Yeah, let's kind of talk about the actual point of avenging, as it were. And
you're gonna rip my heart out now.
Yeah, we have to, and it's the first death of Phil Coulson.
Yeah,
they made him kind of a badass at the end, because he has the destroyer gun, and he's straight up standing up to Loki. Is like, you know, you're gonna fail. You're gonna fail because they all fail, because you're too full of yourself to think that you could fail. Which is, he's not wrong about other villains in that scenario. They tend to get full of themselves, so they think they can't, and they eventually do. But it's the fact that we literally have Loki stabbing this plain human in the back that poses no threat to him, really. Destroyer gun or not, he's still a human. So in that moment, Loki sees this regular old receding hairline human as a big enough threat to do a behind the back sneak attack.
I think of it as, it goes through what he said earlier in that episode, that part where he thinks he's above him. So when Coulson stands up to him, he squishes him because Ant Meat Boot, and the boot was a 3-foot spear. So,
but why not just stab him in the front?
Because he was actually in reality standing behind him. I mean, I don't really think there's anything more logistically than that. I think we maybe underestimate Loki in a couple of ways here. There's a thing that I think, you know, everybody goes like, well, you know, Loki's a thinker and not a fighter. He's a trickster and not a fighter. And that's true, except Loki is a fighter. He's not a warrior in the way that Thor is a warrior. Loki was trained by the Warriors of Asgard. It's not like he's, you know, and we see him later in the film. Again, he's not as good at hand-to-hand combat as Thor, but nobody is. Thor is like the best warrior of Asgard.
And one thing that is
to not be the best, but he's still a good warrior.
One thing that is completely ignored by the movies completely, and it does bother me, he was trained in magic by his mother. Frigga taught him everything he knows about magic.
Which is what I was going to bring up was, Thor is Odin's son. Loki is Freya's son.
You're right.
Because Loki takes more after Freya. He doesn't have to be the strongest. He just tries to be the smartest.
And I wish they explored that more in the films.
Yeah, so I think it's, you know, we talk a lot about, you know, Captain America, the strategist. And yeah, he's still a warrior and stuff, but, you know, we applaud him for thinking around things. You know, he doesn't always have to use his brawn. Sometimes he comes at it sideways. And then when Loki does the same thing, it's like, oh, that trickster Loki, you know, it's like, well, maybe not, you know, I mean, there's still skill there. So maybe it's not always like the thing. I'm not saying stab Coulson in the back, of course. We all know my stance on Coulson. But, you know, watching this movie, I kept saying, like, you know, they do show Loki as a bit more well-rounded. But the thing I hope comes back in the Loki series, and I'm kind of mad never came back in the MCU proper, is that conversation between Coulson and Loki, you know, when Coulson is not quite dead yet. Is, I know that the actual speech itself was Coulson trying to get a shot in at Loki. You know, I'm going to speechify so you'll get close enough so I can use the destroyer weapon, which is a really smart move on Coulson's part. And I like that bit. But, you know, he is correct when he says you're going to lose because you don't have anything to fight for. You're kind of fighting for yourself and power in this nebulous sense, but you don't have anyone you're fighting with. You know, you've got this uneasy alliance with the Chitauri. And then what?
What happens when Thanos decides you are no longer of use to him?
Yeah,
we saw what happens. We saw what happens. But what happened? What, you know, Loki never thinks that way.
No.
Yeah. But even, you know, you're going to take over Earth with an alien army.
Then what?
And then what? Like, what's step two of this plan? But his point is the Avengers have other people to fight for.
Yeah.
You know, they got a buddy, you know. I have people I'm fighting with and beside, and everything, which is his next thing that he says to Fury when Fury finds him. He says they need a reason, and that gives Fury the idea of the baseball cards and the blood and the, you know.
Ruins the pristine Captain America trading card set with Coulson's blood.
So, thing I'm mad didn't come back in the Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. show. Like, well, I wanted Coulson to make a thing of, I used to have a full set of these, and then Nick Fury ruined them.
So, which begs the question, did Nick Fury run to Coulson's locker, open it, grab his cards, run back to Coulson's body, and dip it in his blood as he was pouring out of him, and then just go back?
Yes.
Yes. Because Nick Fury is,
badass mofo. Yeah.
Yeah, he's a badass mofo. It's on his wallet.
Yeah.
Let's kind of, for a moment, talk about the relationship between Clint and Nat here. Now, at this point, we don't know that Clint has a family. I don't think the writers knew he had a family.
No, I don't, because that was never
a thing.
A thing.
So it's like, and yeah, people were saying, oh, they're Budapest, they hooked up. That's what the Budapest was about. But, you know,
Was I the only one that never thought that? Yes. I never got romantic from them. I never wanted it to be romantic.
I didn't want it either, but I, you know, certain fandom, anytime a male and female character talk about a thing, oh, they're in love, even though they've only talked to each other for 5 seconds.
I blame Avengers Earth Mightiest Heroes for that.
Oh, yes.
Because they are a couple in Earth Mightiest Heroes.
Because of this movie, because the show came out right after the movie did.
Yeah.
But, yeah, but it's definitely a brother-sister relationship that the two have. Like, he spared her life, and so she kind of feels that she owes him. Like in the beginning, where she's with the Russian gangsters, and she's using that femininity to try to get answers out of them, using pretending to be weak to get them to tell her their plans. And the minute she hears Barton's been compromised, okay, there goes that plan. I'm going to beat these guys up and go save my friend.
The best part of this scene is Coulson's zero react.
Yeah, he just sits there and listens.
Yeah, but Coulson's no react, as it's just like, hang on a second, you just hear like punches and screams and stuff on the other end of the phone.
This is not the first time this has happened for Coulson. He's like, okay, yeah, oh, yep, mm-hmm.
I don't think that scene comes across as well if Coulson has the slightest reaction to that.
It's just that's Nat. That's what she does. But it's the conversation after their big fight on the helicarrier, where again she cures his brainwashing by giving a big old knock on the head, which works for this movie, but that's not really how that works. But whatever, it's a magic space stone. The fact that Barton remembers all of the things he did while under the Space Stone's influence, the Mind Stone's influence, all the people he hurt and all that stuff he did. And it's just Nat's trying to console him, like, it wasn't you. That wasn't you that did that. But it was me.
See, very similar, the question.
Very similar to Bucky after his brainwashing wears off. It's like, yeah, you can say it wasn't me that did it, but it was me that did it.
Which begs the question. If it wasn't Barton, but then when you get to the Battle of New York, Sulfic knew exactly what he was doing and put in a safety lock.
Yeah, that is one thing, is that Sulfic had enough of his own will by being controlled by the Mind Stone that he put a failsafe in the portal generator.
So why couldn't Clint? Are we saying that Sulfic is better than Clint?
Ooh.
Is that what this movie is trying to tell me? That the nuclear physicist is better than the armed person who works for S.H.I.E.L.D.?
That's a good point, because S.H.I.E.L.D. agents have probably gone through, like, anti-brainwashing, you know, anti-interrogation training, and Selvig's just a dude, you know? I don't know, that is a good point.
Also, yeah, that's a good point right there. Maybe it's just Clint really didn't like his coworkers and took a bit too far.
That one dude who was Clint's checking like, the radar. That one who checking the radar owed him $20.
Yeah. Good. Clint's like, man, I always wanted to kill Brad. Brad kept eating my yogurt out of the fork fridge, you know, like, and my name on it and everything.
Oh, yeah. Let's kind of go through the whole thing with how Tony figures it out, because essentially Loki is him.
Yeah.
Loki and Tony are both huge egomaniacs. And it takes an egomaniac to take down an egomaniac, because, like he says, Loki wants a fanfare. He wants a parade. He wants his name up in lights. And it's like, in that second, Tony realized, oh, crap, he's me.
Yeah. So he doesn't know exactly where to find him.
Yeah, because they set up the fact that Loki is looking for a thing that creates a lot of energy. Tony, at the beginning of the movie, is setting up a thing that creates a lot of energy. I mean, it's They're, you know,
the mirror
they set up the parallels through the whole movie, which I do like.
And the mirror of S.H.I.E.L.D. using the Tesseract, as they publicly say, for a clean energy source, while at the same time, Tony is using his arc reactor as a clean energy source.
Well, S.H.I.E.L.D. is trying to make weapons.
Yeah, but Fury's explanation is we're going to use the Tesseract as a source of clean energy, but in reality, they're going to use it to make weapons.
And I like how quickly Banner sees through that.
Yeah,
because like very quickly you got a magical space rock that gives off radiation, and that's going to be clean energy.
You mentioned Silvig earlier. The events of this movie lead to Silvig kind of going insane in Thor: The Dark World.
Yes,
he sees the Mind Stone and the Space Stone show him the infinite of the universe. And the average human mind cannot comprehend that, and he kind of goes crazy later on, walking around naked in Stonehenge.
I don't think he goes crazy later on. I think he's already crazy in this movie, because when, like, Tony walks up, or Black Widow, I forget who he says it to, but when he's like, "It has shown me all of the truth of the world," and whatever, and he's already starting to grow a little bit of peach fuzz. And
yeah.
I like to think that being that close to two Infinity Stones kind of showed him what was coming and he couldn't handle it.
Possible. I mean, there are many stories of average humans being either seeing or being in close proximity to otherworldly beings and other gods, and the human mind cannot comprehend that.
Now we're getting Lovecraftian up in here.
I wasn't gonna say it, but yeah.
Marvel has borrowed from Lovecraft before. I mean, you know, it's fine. But the thing to me is that does anybody feel bad for Thor? Speaking of Selvig, does anybody feel bad for Thor? Because Thor finally makes it back to Earth, and immediately he's like, "How's Jane Foster?" And they're like, "We couldn't get her for this movie, so we've moved her to a safe place." And he's like, "Ah, yes, as it should be."
Yeah.
I'm like, that has been your entire raison d'etre for, like, things. Oh, and the other thing I wanted to say about Thor, while we're skipping around, Thor is coming in here acting like he's all wise and stuff, and at one point he says, "In my youth, I also craved only war and whatever," and I'm like, your youth of, like, 6 months to a year ago?
Yeah.
Makes perfect sense.
Yeah, because it's only been like 6 months to a year ago that you were down here being like, "I want to wipe out all of the Frost Giants."
According to Fury, Thor came to Earth 1 year ago, so it's been at least a year.
But I will say this, out of everyone in the MCU, Thor has probably the best character development of almost anyone else in there.
Even against Tony, I would say that, yeah.
I would say Thor has probably the best, I guess because of everything that had happened personally between the events right before Endgame came out. I felt a lot for Thor during the events of Infinity War and Endgame, because he went through a lot of crap to get through to that
especially
point.
If you go through Ragnarok, because, again, he loses his three best friends. The fourth is question mark.
Okay, so let's
his
go through
planet
Thor's...
is destroyed. He loses his most prized possession, and I'm not talking about the hammer. I'm talking about the golden locks.
He loses his eye, loses his girlfriend, loses his home, loses his parents, loses his entire planet. It breaks him.
For a guy who's, like, over 1,000 years old at this point, that is the equivalent of one of us having, like, the worst week of our life.
Yeah.
And so it's funny when because I was talking to some people, I'm like, when you think about it this way, Thor only breaks out of his depression at the end by talking to the first person he actually failed to save.
His mother, yeah.
His mother. So once she tells him it's okay, then he's able to actually fight again. But it takes him a lot to get to that point.
Yeah. And there are a lot of people who hated that conversation that, oh, why is Thor mama's boy? It's like, you've never lost your mother, have you, dude?
Yeah, that's like, it's like, that's the first person he fails to save.
And that scene touched both of us because we had recently lost our mother around that time that movie came out. So when that movie came out and we saw, like, if we could go back in time and just have that conversation with our mother.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's just, yeah, I felt for Thor. Let's kind of get back to talking about this movie because we're getting way off
Thor track. And Hulk fight in this movie is amazing.
The one on the helicarrier?
Yeah, the one on the helicarrier is amazing. Because they almost destroy that helicarrier. Just because they are two people who pride themselves on being the strongest and will not stop.
And yeah.
Also, Thor just stands there and calls the hammer through how many layers of that helicarrier, not realizing, like, dude, you are standing in the middle of a flying ship, putting everybody at risk. Like, it's already damaged. And how much damage is your hammer doing, ripping through the hull?
I like to think there's some dude in the bathroom, and the Mjolnir just flies through past him. And it's like, what the heck's going on?
And the fact that this comes back as well.
Yes.
Sometimes it takes a minute. That feels like a Whedonism. But it's a Whedonism that Marvel Studios liked enough to bring back in other movies.
See, I like there are elements of this movie that are really good. And there are parts that don't make a lot of sense. Thor in this movie is really good.
But except for that one part where he says, you know, I used to crave war when a year ago you were trying to kill off all the frost giants.
Yeah.
Also, I like that the trick that he used on Loki with the laying the hammer down on the chest would not work on the Hulk. It's the only creature he couldn't use that on. The hammer has a specific weight. The hammer is not infinitely weighted. The hammer has a specific weight. It's just really, really heavy because it's got a star in it. The thing about being worthy is that the magic of the worthiness negates the weight and allows you to lift it as if it weighs nothing. The thing is, though, is that Hulk is theoretically infinitely strong. As long as he keeps getting angrier and angrier, he can get stronger and stronger. So eventually there becomes a point where the Hulk gets strong enough, angry enough, that he can overcome the finite weight of the hammer. So it doesn't matter if the Hulk is worthy. If he gets angry enough, given enough time, he can eventually lift the hammer. It just takes a long time, and he needs to be angry enough. So eventually, he would overcome that. It would just take a while. Let's talk about kind of the two more scenes that are always fan favorites. One, Hulk versus Loki.
Yeah,
because that's always a fan favorite. I think we talked about it before, but they actually accomplished that by just putting a rope around Tom Hiddleston's ankle and just three guys just yanked him at random points during his speech in each take. So that he would just be like, that, you know. I think he said something that he, like, kept having flashbacks to that for a while. Because he would just, like, give that speech and then just three of the strongest guys on set would just randomly yank him out of that speech.
Yee team to Loki.
Fortunately, he doesn't seem to have gotten hurt long-term from having that happen to him over and over again. But then the other fan favorite scene has to be the end credit scene.
The shawarma scene?
The shawarma scene. And what I never really realized until the rewatch is that scene is foreshadowed in a way that I never realized until this rewatch.
So when Tony realizes there's a new coming in, if you look in the background of the scene where he's getting like chowed on by the Chitauri, you see the swarmer shop. And he just
when he does the Jonah and the whale bit.
Yeah.
He bursts out of the Chitauri monster and he hits the ground. He hits the ground right in front of the shawarma place. So when he comes back out from the nuke and he comes to and he starts asking the gang about shawarma, and he goes, I don't know what it is, but there's a really good shawarma place about two blocks down. That's where he hit the ground from the Jonah and the whale bit.
Apparently that was an ad lib by Robert Downey Jr.
Yes, because the original line was "What's next?" and they changed it to he changed it. He changed a lot of lines in his movies. But he changed it to shawarma.
Yeah, and now that's a part of the MCU because we've got a shawarma shack in the Avengers Campus.
You know, I actually do not. I never had shawarma before. So I think when we go to Avengers Campus, I should probably try shawarma.
Yeah.
I actually tried it at a convention afterwards because of that. Because they do not sell it where I live, because where I live sucks. So when I went out of town, I think it was a MarsCon. I think you were with me Tuesday for that. And I was like, hey, there's a shawarma place. I gotta get shawarma. So. And then we've got to talk about the other mid-credit scene where we actually do see Thanos, because there is a line in there that should be more important than it is.
The courting death line.
Yeah, because the other tells Thanos that if he goes up against the humans again, it would be courting death. And that's when Thanos turns and smiles. And in the comic, getting the Infinity Stones is Thanos' way of courting death, and then they changed Thanos into an eco-terrorist, and it has nothing to do with courting death, so... Well,
death is an actual being, and death is a woman, and Thanos wants to have relations with the personification of death.
See, the problem with him wanting relations with Death is Death already has someone she's attracted to.
He exists in another universe. He is not part of this universe at this time.
But this is
can be.
He will be when they figure out how to have 20th Century Studios make a third movie. But yeah, Death likes Deadpool because Deadpool can't die.
So, yeah, there's like a weird little love triangle thing, and Thanos is like, hey, maybe if I kill half the people in the universe, that will please Death, and then she'll notice me. You know, it's Thanos' weird, like, maybe if I bring flowers and chocolates to that girl I like, she'll give me a chance, and instead, it's killing half the life in the universe.
It's like, you know, the quickest way to a girl's heart is your enemy's skull.
I mean, it's probably her enemy skull would be a better gift. I don't really care. You know, it's like, I don't really care about some random dude's enemies. Like, bring me the skull of my enemies. That'll work a lot better.
So much came out of this movie, not just of the other films, but just immediately following. Because we get the scepter ends up with Hydra. The cube ends up on Asgard. There's a salvage company owner named Adrian Toomes that gets his hand on alien technology. All that stuff happens, you know, who knows what else that they could possibly tie into this. You know, so many events.
We're still getting fallout from the Battle of New York now in the MCU. It keeps... coming up.
Yeah. And in another timeline, the Avengers come back in time and ruin everything, and Loki escapes with the Tesseract, and there's a Disney Plus series.
Yeah.
I think that's all we can really say on the first Avengers movie.
There is one thing I will never forgive Avengers for doing.
What?
Giving DC the idea for Justice League.
Do we have to bring that up?
Not right now.
No, we don't. Moving on.
So let's ask the question. Let's start with our guest here, David. Does the Avengers still have the magic?
I believe it does. I rewatched it for the first time in a long time. Since I subjected my god kids to watching every single Marvel movie in order leading up to Endgame. And it is still a really good movie.
All right. Kiki, does Avengers still have the magic?
Yeah, I was shocked by how much of this film I had kind of forgotten. Especially the beginning scenes. With the S.H.I.E.L.D. campus and stuff like that. I told the friend I was watching it with, I was like, wow, I had forgotten a lot of this movie. But it really fits together well. A lot of the scenes still work. The actors are still good. It still holds up logically. Even looking back, there's not a lot of plot holes. It's still a fun watch. The jokes still hold up. And some of them are iconic, you know?
I'm going to agree. Avengers still has the magic. One more extra question I want to throw out there. Does this movie work as a standalone movie? Can you show someone who has never seen any of the Marvel movies this movie, and do you think they would enjoy it just on this movie's merit alone?
I think they would. The only thing you would have to do is explain Thor. Because Thor literally comes out of nowhere. If you've never seen any of the Marvel movies and have no idea who anyone is, Thor literally comes out of nowhere in this movie. So once you get it, so pause it and explain where Thor came from.
They do explain it in the film. That they do. From Asgard, and the Bifrost was destroyed and blah, blah, blah.
So I think you could easily show this to any, like, when my goddaughter was, like, little, I showed her this movie first, and she loved it. She understood everything that was going on, so.
Kiki?
If you're taking that to mean you don't have to explain anything, and they don't have to see anything else, no. I think this needs some explanation. I'm not sure this is a completely standalone film. I think this needs some backstory.
That's kind of where I am, because I remember when this movie came out and there were so much hype around it. People were going to see it, and then so many people were saying that how lost they were. So this is a sequel to five other movies. And there are people who didn't like that. Now, why do I have to watch five other movies to watch this movie? And to this day, that is still an issue with the MCU. There are people who say, well, why do I need to watch 20 movies to understand what happens in this one?
So true story, at my job, one of the places I used to work at, we were showing Avengers Endgame. And people would come up and like, what's that? Well, it's the Avengers movie. Well, do I have to watch anything else? Like, there are 22 other movies you have to watch before you can see this one. And they just couldn't fathom that much time to do. It's like, you can go on YouTube and get like a 30-minute video that tells you everything.
The thing is that I consistently end up watching these movies with somebody who has seen every single Marvel film. All of the relevant Marvel shows, so like WandaVision and Falcon and Winter Soldier, you know. And I constantly have to re-explain things. I pity the casual fan, because I'm not even the diehardest of the diehard fans, and it's still kind of hard for me to keep up with, you know. So, you know, I get where people are coming from, because honestly, that's kind of how I feel about the Arrowverse TV shows. Like, there's only one or two of them I want to watch, and they have gotten so connected now. I tried to watch, what's the one with the time travel that had the guy from Doctor Who?
Legends of Tomorrow.
All I wanted to do was watch that one show, and I tried to watch the first episode thinking, like, well, they'll have, like, an introductory episode. No, they did not. They jumped into it like you already had an idea who all those characters were, which I didn't.
Because and, in theory, the introduction episode for Legends is in Arrow, I think.
I think that's what she's getting at. You have to watch Arrow and you have to watch Flash
to get to what's going on here. All I needed was like one episode that's just like, here's who these characters are, and I would have been a fan of that show. But they didn't give me that 1 hour. You know, if they'd have just given me that 1 hour, I would have been like, okay, I'll give this show a shot. And they weren't willing to give me that, and I was like, okay, I'm not willing to go back and hunt down, like, the relevant episodes of 5 different shows where they introduce all these characters just to watch the one show I might be interested in.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if they'd have just given me like one episode of Ketchup, maybe I would have been a fan of that show. But I'm not interested in the 5 other shows, as evidenced by the fact that I don't watch them. You know, it's like, so I get people who are like, well, I might watch a movie about Iron Man, but I'm not really interested in the Thor series or whatever. You know, I get it. I get it. But we've discussed before, I want all Marvel all the time. I don't really care what you're giving me. I just want it to be in the Marvel universe. I'll watch it, you know. So.
Yeah. So, yeah. I mean, it's a good movie, but as a standalone, iffy. I'll say
this
iffy.
This is the first Marvel film you cannot watch by itself.
And unfortunately, the further you get down, the more you have to watch the other films. It really feels like this is every movie ends up being the next episode of a TV show, where you have to watch every episode to figure out what the overall story is.
I kind of wonder what we're going to get out of Black Widow. Is Black Widow going to be a standalone, or is Black Widow going to be... Because it's kind of a prequel-ish.
It's, again, what we know, it takes place after Civil War and before Infinity War. So we know that other characters from the movie might make appearances. I believe this one of the trailers shows off Thunderbolt Ross. So he's apparently in this film. So who knows what other characters are going to show up for however long in this film.
Yeah.
Oh, let's. I think that's all we can say on that. So, let's move on here, David.
Yes.
As our special guest, as a first-time special guest, you get one request, and let us know what your request will be, and that will be next week's episode.
So, I thought long and hard about this, and since I saw Avengers, I would like. There's another movie that has a team assembling for a greater good. Big Hero 6.
Big Hero 6. So we're technically sticking with Marvel for one more week.
But not Nick Fury.
No.
Fury can't go rest after his big month.
No, Fury had a nice long month. He can stay and rest. We will come back to the MCU at a later point in time. I think I'm MCU'd out for the time being. But yes, tune in next week for Big Hero 6, and we will talk to you all next time. Bye.
Don't let the magic stop here.
Join our conversation online on Facebook at Rewatching the Magic,
Twitter at Rewatch the Magic,
and of course, new episodes every week at rewatchingthemagic.podbean.com.
Remember, the magic is for everyone.
It only stops if you let it.